listening to the Jefferson Exchange. Thanks for joining us. The JX starts today with a debrief where JPR reporters discuss the stories they've been covering this week, including big changes to homelessness in Grants Pass, a new national monument, and an updated Oregon map showing wildfire hazard. I'm Justin Higginbottom, public health and safety reporter.
I'm Roman Battaglia, science, environment, and politics reporter.
And I'm Jane Vaughn, housing, homelessness, and education reporter.
Rowan, let's start with you. This week, the state of Oregon released a finalized map of wildfire hazard throughout the state. What's that map?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory. It shows wildfire hazard of every tax lot or property in the state. There's three different categories: low, medium, and high hazard. And so essentially, it shows you the environmental hazard that your specific property faces, and not necessarily the risk of, like, your house catching on fire and burning down in the wildfire. I talked to someone who had a good explanation of what this means. So, you know, imagine you live in a flood zone and you put your house on stilts. You've protected your house from a flood, but you haven't gotten rid of the risk that a flood could happen on your property.
Right.
And so that's what this is the risk that, you know, wildfire could happen on your property, not that it could destroy your home. So it was developed by Oregon State University researchers, went through a whole public comment process, and was finally released this week.
Right. So we've been covering this for a while. I feel like I'm experiencing a little deja vu here. Didn't the state already release a wildfire risk map a few years ago?
Yeah. So this is the second iteration of the map. So originally they released one called the wildfire risk map, not a hazard map, in 2022. But there was a lot of public backlash against it, and it was withdrawn and reworked. There were complaints about the way it categorize things and stuff like that, a lot of stuff that we won't get into. But, you know, they spent years reworking the map and, you know, making some changes to the categories, some changes to the data. And, you know, now it's finally back in a format that researchers are kind of hoping it'll be better received than it was last time.
Yeah, I'm sure everyone's happy with the new release.
Yes,
map.
Of course.
What are some of the changes that researchers made on this map compared to the original one?
Yeah, I think some of the bigger changes, I mean, obviously the original one, there were more categories, and this time there's only three categories. It's called a hazard map now instead of a risk map to represent the environmental hazard and not the risk to your home. There are also some big changes in agricultural areas. So like fields and pastures and irrigated lands are reduced in their hazard level. And that's because, you know, during the summer, they're usually irrigated, so they are at a lower risk of catching on fire. And then they also did some kind of smoothing of the boundaries between the different hazard levels because there were a lot of complaints about neighbor-to-neighbor differences. Like, my neighbor is in medium hazard, but I'm in a high hazard zone. Why is that? And so there's kind of less instances now where one person, you know, might be surrounded by other hazard levels or something to kind of avoid that. There's still some instances, but it's less now.
Less. Yeah, yeah, because it's based off the tax lot, it can kind of look a little pixelated,
yeah, exactly,
on the map. So what should homeowners know about this if they live in one of the high hazard areas?
Yeah, so you might be affected by these new building codes that are going to be developed later this year, but only if you're in a high hazard category plus you're in a wildland urban interface zone. It's sort of near forest land, and in the map you can look at it. You know, it'll tell you if you're in the WUI zone, as they're called, and it shows where those are. And so if you meet those two categories, then you have to follow these defensible space and home hardening building codes. Some of them will only affect new construction or, you know, renovations, but those aren't actually in place yet. But you can appeal. There is an appeals process that's through March 10th, and any property owner can appeal to change their categorization. You can even change your categorization up higher if you think your home is at more hazard. Someone said the reason why you might do that is because you could get more financial benefits to, like, you know, tax incentives or something to home harden, things right, like that. And so you can fill out a form on the ODF's website, and anyone who will be affected by those rules who are in that high hazard and WUI zones should receive a packet in the mail sometime soon.
Okay, great. So yeah, let's talk about another story you had. You also reported on a decision by Josephine County Commissioners this week that puts the Grants Pass Library in limbo. What happened there?
Yeah, so the three-person commission voted unanimously to terminate their lease with the Grants Pass Library downtown there. The library has been in that building since the 50s, and they've been paying a lease of $1 a year in rent for that library building for a while. And that's ever since the library district kind of reconfigured when it was defunded by the county in the 2000s and formed into this new library district. But you know, I think it's important to know that the library also pays around $22,000 a year to the county to help with maintenance. So it's not just that $1.
Right. So why did commissioners want to cancel their lease with the library district?
Yeah, this was spearheaded by the outgoing commissioner, John West. He said that taxpayers shouldn't have to pay for the maintenance of this library because they didn't want this library if they don't live in the taxing district itself, and that they need the money for other things like public safety or the jail. And you know, he says that now that it's called a community library and not a county library, that the county doesn't need to support it. I also heard from some listeners, including this morning after the story was published, you know, who called this a decision of retaliation by John West. You know, I think it's important to note that John West was recalled late last year. That's why he's leaving. And so this was one of his last meetings before he's out the door. And a couple of the main supporters of his recall movement serve on boards on the library district. Pat Fahey, who failed recently to win a commissioner seat, donated to the recall campaign and sits on the library's board of directors. And Jay Meredith, the campaign director, is also on the library's budget committee. And John West said the eventual goal is to move some other county departments into that building because it's next to some other county buildings and kind of put them all in one place.
I see. How did the library respond to this?
I mean, not great, as you can imagine. They were surprised by this. They were asked to come to this meeting, but they said they couldn't because of the holidays. They weren't going to be able to have legal counsel and prepare enough. But commissioners went forward with the meeting anyways. And, you know, the library director said this undermines community trust. And, you know, it just... I also talked with someone who's part of this advocacy group for the library who said this kind of puts the county in a precarious legal position and opens them up to lawsuits. She said the library could have grounds to sue the county over this decision because the county charter specifically says that commissioners will support and maintain the libraries. So charging them $1 in rent was a way of supporting the library. And without that, commissioners won't really be doing anything to support the library. The library sued the county last year over another thing commissioners did, letting people leave the library district, and the county reversed course after that. So we'll have to see what happens that.
And what does this mean for the Grants Pass Library and those people that use it?
Yeah, so the library right now has 30 days from Monday to negotiate a new lease with the county, or the commissioners could evict them. Commissioner John West wanted to charge the market rate for rent, which would be around $15,000 a month for the library, which is a bit more than what they were previously paying. You know, the person I talked to with the advocacy group said that would be impossible for them. There are plans to build a new library in Grants Pass. The district bought some land, but construction isn't expected to start for at least another 2 years. So they don't really have a place to go if they actually get kicked out right now. Justin, yes. let's talk to you now. You covered a new national monument in our backyard. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so President Biden established two national monuments this week on Tuesday. So we have the Chuckwalla National Monument in Southern California's Coachella Valley. And near us, the Satitla Highlands National Monument, which tribes and conservationists have been fighting for years, really. It covers 200,000 acres within Modoc, Shasta, Trinity, and Klamath National Forests. That's about 30 miles from Mount Shasta. And this is a really unique volcanic landscape. It's also called Medicine Lake Highlands. It's really a beautiful area if anyone's visited. I recommend so. It's also important ecologically. It is a large aquifer that feeds the Fall River and eventually goes into Lake Shasta. As many people know, that water is used for drinking by millions of people. And it's the ancestral home of the Pitt River tribe and the Modoc peoples. Like I mentioned, native tribes have been fighting for a long time for this national monument. There was legislation introduced to designate this a national monument. That's probably not needed now, although I'll talk more about that.
Yeah, so the tribes have been fighting for a while to protect this area. Obviously, you mentioned a lot of tribal stuff here, an ancestral home. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, so I mentioned this is a volcanic area. The Pitt River tribe has been in legal battles for really decades at this point to stop geothermal companies from developing the areas because it has that sort of geology. They're also worried about, environmental degradation, but also I spoke with a tribal member involved in this, and she said they're skeptical this development would actually help them if it went through. They're worried these companies will come in and get rich off the land, and her tribe or other locals won't see any benefit from that, which is fair. And this is also a sacred place for tribes. The Pitt River's creation story involves this area. So that's another important reason that's pretty hard to quantify, a reason why they fought for its protection for so long.
Yeah, interesting. Who was opposed to this national monument, and what were their reasons for it?
So I spoke with someone with a group that represents timber interests, and they oppose the monument for obvious reasons. There's just a disagreement about how much the land should be utilized for logging and just weighing those economic benefits with other interests. But also groups opposed to the designation say they're concerned it won't be managed for wildfire properly, which involves thinning tree stands, of course. The Pitt River tribe, though, said they're very clear that they want the area treated to prevent wildfires. Their community has actually been devastated by fire in the past. So they take that very seriously. And actually, the legislation they helped introduce makes explicit mention of wildfire prevention and tree thinning and things like that. So another argument against the monument designation is the process that the president used. So he used the Antiquities Act rather than letting this legislation make its way through Congress. A bill to create a national monument might have more input or back and forth between different interest groups. So you might get something that's more palatable to more people. But anyways, the future of the monument isn't totally settled. Trump could decide to change it. He has that power. He will have that power. And when he took office last time, he shrunk a couple national monuments in Utah, although, you know, there might have been more economic reasons to do so in those cases, because those monuments in Utah had a lot of oil and gas reserves. So we'll see what he does. With these two monuments, Biden says he's conserved more land and waters than any president in history. And Trump has said he would like to roll at least some of that back for development.
Interesting. Thanks, Justin.
Thanks. Okay, Jane, you covered a big story out of Grants Pass this week about changes to that city's approach to homelessness. What happened there?
So the city council had a big meeting on Tuesday, and they have these newly sworn in councilors who made some really big changes. And so the first one was they revoked a grant that had been given to this local homeless nonprofit called Mint. And they were going to use it to buy these two parcels of land, which had two buildings, and they were going to make a low barrier homeless shelter. So councilors revoked that grant, which had been given in December. And then they also made some big changes to these two city owned campsites they have for homeless people. So one of them they closed completely, and one of them they restricted the hours. So 5 p.m. to 7 a.m.
Wow. So those are some big changes. Can you give us some background on this?
Sure. So we've talked about homelessness a lot. The key factor in this is the Supreme Court case, which the city won last summer, in June, this longstanding legal battle over homelessness in Grants Pass. Court sided with the city and upheld its ban on public camping. But the city still has to comply with an Oregon state law, which says that rules regulating where homeless people can camp have to be, quote, objectively reasonable, which is not defined. So this is the first meeting that was conducted with their new leadership as well. They were sworn in on Monday. Their first meeting was on Tuesday afternoon. Some people disliked how quick that turnaround time was and said maybe the public didn't get enough notification, even though it technically did meet the, 24-hour posting rule. And so we've got four new counselors and a new mayor, so a lot of new leadership coming in. They were all backed by the county's Republican Party, and they ran on a platform of public safety. So they're really making a big, strong statement in their first meeting.
So what do these changes mean for homeless in Grants Pass?
So obviously, homelessness is still a huge problem in Grants Pass and in the state. Just yesterday, Oregon Governor Tina Kotek extended her emergency executive order about homelessness. But in terms of what this means for Grants Pass, so the shelter that Mint was going to open, the counselors had concerns about the state of the buildings, which do need some extensive repair. They're pretty run down. They've got problems with mold. They need new roofs, things like that. So Mint had planned to repair the buildings, but the counselors really were concerned about the state and the location of the shelter. So Mint is now going to try to maybe extend their lease on those buildings, maybe look at other options. So kind of to be determined what's going to happen with the shelter. And then in terms of the campsites, the city had opened them back in late August as a way of complying with that state law I mentioned. You have to be objectively reasonable, give people a place to go. But they closed one of the sites and restricted the hours of the other, which I should note was against the advice of their own legal counsel, who had to leave while they were still talking. Mm-hmm. He recommended not doing anything, and they did some changes anyway. So there have been some concerns about the sites. There was no water or shade. They've been called a public health disaster and compared to concentration camps. So no one was really saying good things about the campsites, but the question now is, what's the alternative? Where will homeless people go now? And the council didn't really answer that on Tuesday, so we'll have to keep watching and see what their decision is next and what plan they have for homelessness in the city.
Well, thanks, Jane. So that's it for the debrief this week. Thanks for listening. You can reach the newsroom with comments on our coverage and suggestions for things we should cover in the future through our news tip line. You can find that on our website at ijpr.org. And you can find this program and more on the website at jeffexchange.org or subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or all the other platforms.